Good evening. Welcome to the Salieri Report. Today is July 11th, 2019. This is Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this week. Events. I'm in Bulgaria, in Sofia. It's beautiful. Luckily, the heat wave seems to have passed us by. I seem to be followed by a cool wave, which is most welcome. I'll be leaving on Saturday, going to Italy, so I'll be in Italy until the 30th, and then I go to Zurich for 2 days, then to Lake Constance. I'll be there until August 8th. I'm meeting 2 subscribers in Cressborn, 4 p.m. on August 8th, so if you're interested in joining, let me know. And then I'll be in Basel from August 9th to the 15th, and then I fly back to the United States on the 16th. I'm headed up through Ohio to Toronto. Rob Kirby has offered to sponsor a light lunch on Saturday, August 24th in Toronto. And get ready for this. This is going to be incredible. Daniel Estulin will be joining us, and will Dr. Mark Skidmore. So it's going to be Skidmore, Estulin, Kirby, and Fitz all together Saturday, August 24th at 12 noon, so light lunch. And you'll be seeing an update coming out about that this week. And if not this week, early next week. And then I'll be in Portland, as promised, on November 15th. That's a Friday, and you'll be hearing about that the next week or two. And then I'm trying to organize something for December 20th in Malvern, same as we did last year. That's in Pennsylvania. Volume 2 of The Real Game of Missing Money mailed out this week. So if you're a premium subscriber or you ordered it, it should be coming in next week or the week after that. It usually takes up to 10 days to get through the mails. Volume 1 has sold out much more quickly than anticipated, so we have a new big order in. That shipment will be coming in on the 24th. And we want to thank you for everything Salieri Report subscribers are doing to keep the Hickory Valley Post Office in the black. If you live in a town as small as Hickory Valley, you love keeping that post office busy, because it's a great thing to have your own post office if you're in a rural area. It's critical between now and the 2020 election ending that we start asking questions now and keep asking questions about FASB 56 and the $21 trillion missing money. Once I get all the books out to subscribers, both Volume 1 and Volume 2, I'm going to start sending copies out to a variety of political representatives, commentators, other people. And I'm just going to keep doing that and asking questions between now and the election. I want thousands of copies all over the 3 continents and in the English-speaking world in everyone's hands. Just the more people who know about this, the more questions being asked, the more people thinking about this, the more we can start to build towards where real actions can be taken. Again, please get physical copies in people's hands that you're asking questions of, particularly anybody responsible for managing your resources. So your CPA, your bank, your insurance company, your money managers, your pension fund trustees, and then obviously state and local representatives. So we have bulk discounts so you can buy in bulk, but it's okay to send the PDF out. If you don't want to buy the books, don't worry, just send the PDF out. It's fine to send it as a stick with a digital file. It's okay to print it out and send. I think you get a better result if you put something physical in people's hands. Anyway, keep me posted on how we can support your efforts. We have templates for letters, and you can link to those there on the website. But just let us know what we can do to help you get this material out circulating. It's going to take a very deep, long-lived conversation, so we might as well just jump in and get it started. Our theme tonight are power shifts in the Anglo-American Alliance. It's clear that we have not only the post-financial coup consolidations that we've talked about for the last year or two underway. That's all anticipated, but there's a lot going on, and much of it revolves around moving to more centralized control and more secrecy and the shedding of excess capacity. And, you know, as you watch it, there's no doubt it reminds me of that expression in Scripture, through the glass darkly. We're watching these things through the glass darkly. It really got kicked off, and you could see the big shift underway when Harvard Endowment announced that they were basically going to lay off their internal staff and go dark. You know, that was it's always the tail of the, you know what I mean, the tail in the financial sense, but the deep equity that triggers the response. Then you had Brexit. And as you know, I believe the Queen and the leadership wanted Brexit to protect the city, the Commonwealth, and their global financial operation, including the offshore havens, to protect the secrecy. Because I think secrecy is going up and not down. So there's a lot going on. I realized by talking about the city with Farrell during the News Trends and Stories, I got a lot of questions about what is the city. So I put some links from Wikipedia, but go take a look at the Wikipedia entry on the City of London if you're not familiar with the fact that the city within London, which is the financial center of the Eurozone and arguably of the world, the city is a separate legal entity, and it's enormous. So let me just give you some statistics. The UK Financial Services, so that's not just the city, but the whole UK, including all of London, Edinburgh, etc. UK Financial Services has over 2 million employees, and it's almost 7% of the British economic output, and it's 11% approximately of tax revenue. So financial services in England is a very, very significant industry. The city's a major part. It's got about $150 billion annual output. It's 30% of the world's currency dealing. That's very significant. 18% of gross border lending. It's a major derivative center. They pay about 65 billion euro in taxes. It's about 3% of GNP. Approximately half of the city's business is domestic, 25% is the European Union nations, and then the remainder, the rest of the world. Figure 20 trillion of bank assets and securities. The Economist just had a piece on the city and estimated approximately 1.3 trillion has left due to Brexit. You're seeing serious competition with the city from Paris, from Amsterdam, from Frankfurt, as Brexit approaches. The size of the offshore havens and territories is very, very significant. Go to Wikipedia and look up British offshore territories, and then look up Commonwealth of Nations. And what you'll see is there are very significant financial interests and relationships all around the world. We're waiting for the Conservative Party leadership election. So that was triggered when May announced May 24th that she would resign, and it's widely expected that Boris Johnson will be announced. We've got 11 more days, so that announcement is expected on July 22nd, and there's a lot of concern about Johnson. He seems very interested in taking a hard Brexit, and I think there are many people who are concerned about that, but I don't know. You know, at this point, I think you're better off taking a hard Brexit and getting it done, and he probably understands the impossibility of reaching agreement between the Parliament and the sort of British leadership and the EU leadership, you know, in certainly by October. Okay, so the first thing was we started with the Harvard Endowment basically firing their in-house staff and going very dark. The second thing is Brexit putting the Brits and the entire British global system in a position to really protect its secrecy and to go more secret. You know, I sort of see it as kicking the Germans out of their business. Then the third thing that happens, October 2018, is FASB 56 gets passed. And you see much tighter central control by the deep state of the whole federal finances. I mean, we're literally seeing the largest government and securities issuer in the world essentially move to a process, as Rob Kirby would say, of operating without accounting. We are talking about major secrecy. Now, since FASB 56 has passed, I'm seeing what looks to be renegotiation with and a power shift between the deep state and the different operators, whether it's Lockheed or Boeing. And we now see this last week in Philadelphia. A ship financed by J.P. Morgan Chase was basically busted with 20 tons of cocaine, over $1 billion of cocaine shipment, run by a shipping company out of Switzerland. And you look at that, one of my colleagues said, you know, when I was in enforcement, you know, we got the mules, we got the low-level guys. You didn't bust a ship with 20 tons of cocaine owned by J.P. Morgan. So something's definitely going on because this is very unusual. Now, we've seen Trump make a deal with the Bush faction and then bury the hatchet with the Queen in the meeting in Britain. Two other things have happened that are very interesting, and it kind of looks like the post-deal cleanup is underway. The first is we just saw the British ambassador to the U.S. resign. That was essentially yesterday. Someone had leaked his very blunt telegraph back or missives back to the Home Office that were extremely critical of Trump. But you also wonder, since he was the ambassador from January 2016 on, while the Steele dossier was going on, he was the British ambassador. And you wonder if this isn't cleaning house after the, essentially, whatever the Brits were trying to do didn't get done. And so now that all the people who failed, now that the Queen and Trump have buried the hatchet, have to go. So you wonder if it isn't a bit of house cleaning over the failure of the Steele dossier. But the second thing that's happened, and this is very, very big, is Jeffrey Epstein has been rearrested. There's no doubt that the Jeffrey Epstein story is a furball. So it's another one of those furballs, as I ranted last week, you don't want to lose your mind over. But the reality is, after Trump came back from Britain, and after that meeting was over, we started to see a couple of assassinations. And some of them clearly looked like they had to do with the Wiener laptop, which is very much connected with the Epstein sex rings and what appears to be a significant control operation. What has happened? The Department of Justice, through the Southern District of New York, has taken complete control of the Epstein case. Now, we had David Boies and some other people doing civil actions, and you almost wonder if the Department of Justice isn't stepping in to stop the Midianite thing from happening and going out of control. By doing this, by asserting a criminal investigation at the Department of Justice level, what you're doing is you're asserting control over the whole situation. And that means anything in the civil courts can be blocked because you've got a Department of Justice criminal thing going. Meantime, as part of this effort, they've announced a effort to try and get anybody who's got any evidence against Epstein whatsoever to call the FBI. And in a situation like this, when you're trying to centralize, what you do is you try to understand the full extent of your liability. And you pull it all in, you get mastery of the data, you get mastery of the documents, you get mastery of everything. And then you've got control and you figure out where you're going to go from there. So I don't presume to know yet what the goal is, other than to take control of everything, stop the Midianite thing from happening. There's no doubt that with a combination of the Wiener laptop and the essentially a criminal investigation and indictment moving against Epstein, that you've got political leverage on a massive number of people, because this was a pretty serious operation and I believe was very much connected with the missing money. In other words, you're pulling money out of the U.S. government. You used it to capitalize Epstein and Clinton, the Clinton Foundation, and God knows how many other things, probably the Blair Foundation. And then you're basically laundering money out of the U.S. government and then laundering it back in a variety of ways. So this was pretty significant, required a very significant control operation. Anyway, we can speculate all day long, but, you know, somebody is taking a major step to get control of this thing, and where they take it is anybody's guess. I wouldn't assume that there's any swamp draining on, but since we are in a consolidation of the financial coup, and this is a very significant indication of that consolidation, the leadership can use this to clean up in a variety of ways, both publicly and non-publicly. It could happen very quietly. What's going on right now? We've got the Bohemian Grove going on, which in my experience is the major decision-making event in the United States. And it's interesting. So first we had Harvard go dark, then we had Brexit, then we have FASB 56. The fourth big event is coming, and that is the announcement of the Jedi contract in August, which is, you guessed it, right after the Bohemian Grove. So it wouldn't surprise me if the final decisions are going to be made at the Grove. With the Jedi contract in place, we will have the ability by after the election to engage in radical reengineering of the U.S. government. And so it's going to be very important to see what happens. Microsoft and Amazon are the finalists, and the question is, are they going to have one or both? But once you issue and onboard that contract, you're going to have the DoD cloud and the 17 intelligence agencies all in the cloud together, and then the real fun's going to begin. Some big unanswered questions within the Anglo-American Alliance situation. One is the role of Israel. I put up an unanswered questions, a sort of questionable video, but one that does a good job. It's by an Australian who is impossibly angry, although I can understand why. It's certainly something to be angry about, but who talks a lot about the role of Israel in IT, and it's no doubt where a lot of their power has come from in the last 20 years. And there are real security, national security issues and national security concerns. It was one of the reasons that I wanted everyone to watch the Zero Days documentary on the Stuxnet virus, because it talks about some of the challenges of dealing with Israel, who's unbelievably aggressive, and I think over the line on a lot of this sort of, you know, backdoor controls through the systems questions. Anyway, role of Israel, very big question. Second thing is Iran. We're seeing a constant effort to squeeze Iran. We have more squabbles between the UK tankers and the UK Navy. And one of my questions coming out of the meeting between Trump and Queen, does the City of London and Trump, did they do a deal on essentially what's going to happen now on Iran? If the Anglo-American Alliance has really significantly unified around bringing down Iran, I think the chances of them doing it are much greater than you might think when, you know, we've been talking about this on the Salieri Report. But it's only going to work if they just simply squeeze on economic sanctions and are willing to take whatever time it takes to just squeeze and squeeze and squeeze. There are clearly drumbeats of war. So there's if you look at what is going on with the tankers in the Gulf, you know, the tensions are high. And the problem you have if you're Iran, no matter how badly you're squeezed, and the squeeze is bad because last year inflation rate in Iran was said to be 31%. Now the reports are it's up to anywhere from 37 to 50%. And that's a very, very painful squeeze. The problem if you're the Iranian leadership is that the more moderates have gotten their head clocked because the U.S. pulled out of the deal. So you've got the more radical guys in that sense empowered. And the problem is, how did they make a deal with the United States? The United States doesn't keep their deals. If you want to understand why this is happening, get out your atlas, or I hope you have a globe near your desk. It's very important to look at the geography. Iran is smack in the middle of the Silk Road. So Iran is sort of the gateway between Europe and Asia. And the reality is, if you want to control equity on the Silk Road, you got to control that landmass. So that's what this is about. If you don't have a globe in your house or a really big, good atlas, I would really encourage you to get one. If you didn't get a good grounding in geography, it's a good time to take the course or take a class or teach yourself. I used to, a lot of times in the Salieri Report annual wrap-up, best books for the year, will recommend that you read the World Almanac. I try and read it once every couple of years. Just sit down and read it cover to cover. You know, not in one sitting, but throughout the year, just, you know, take 20 pages a week or so and just turtle through it. But to understand this environment with this kind of change and the impact of technology, it is absolutely essential, because geography really is destiny. With that in mind, one of the people who's been very good on geography is George Friedman. He started Stratford, but he's left. He's got his own firm now. He did a rant on the likelihood of war in the 21st century and the role of war in our lives. I put it up. It's up at Geopolitics under the third quarter news trends and story. It's the most irritating style. He can be an unbelievably irritating guy, but there are a lot of hard facts worth listening to. And he tends to talk very concretely about both violence and war and geography. Anyway, but it's, if you don't mind the irritating style, there's a a lot of good factoids in it. But the reality is if the Anglo-American alliance is going to hold its position, it sure looks to me from what we're watching in the Gulf that they've decided that they're going to squeeze Iran until Iran comes to heel. So to summarize, very big shifts going on in the Anglo-American alliance, and that includes more central control, more secrecy, shedding what is now excess people and capacity, and a very big unanswered question about what's next in the Middle East and who's more dangerous, our friends or our enemies. I'm going to be doing a hang with Dr. Farrell next week. We're going to be talking about the missing money, but I'm sure the relationship of the missing money to the evolution of the Anglo-American alliance is going to be part of the topic. Money and markets. I'm working with a Wednesday close, just to let you know, because I'm in Sofia and I'm 7 hours ahead, and to get this to you in time requires working with a Wednesday close. The U.S. dollar index still very flat for the year. It's up 0.62%, a little bit more than 0.5%. Fixed income still flying, as I said, just when you thought the long bull bond market was over, it bulls a little bit more. The long treasury ETF TLT up 11.87% for the year. The intermediate IEF up 7.10%. The bond aggregate up 6.28%. And junk flying 11.29%, almost as much as treasuries. It's kind of, given FASB 56, it's sort of like junk and junk. I had a great talk with Rob Kirby in the process of setting up our lunch for August 24th. And he talked about how much he thinks it's the missing money, but taking bonds out of the market and how tight the collateral is. He said, you know, there's plenty of money around. And that's what you see everywhere. When I was over in Texas, we were walking around one of the malls, and it's just appalling to see how much capital is in inventory given little sales. But we're also talking about what's happening with the oil and gas and the money that's been put into shale that's not economic. So there's clearly, you know, if you look at the liquidity flowing around, it's unbelievable. One of the headlines today is Carlyle in Washington has raised another $5 billion in two funds, including an infrastructure fund. I'll never forget when the money started disappearing from HUD. Carlyle started having billions of dollars flow in, and everybody was saying, where is this money coming from? So you really wonder if this is, you know, if FASB means lots more money disappearing out the back door of the government into Carlyle. Big question there. Remember, Carlyle is where Powell went to as the money suddenly showed up in Carlyle in the late 90s. I always believe that my old Dillon partner sent Powell over there to watch it because they didn't trust those guys. Anyway, the New York Fed model, tweeted it out earlier this week, shows a probability of recession is now reached relatively high. And Powell's testimony, Fed Chairman Powell's testimony, indicates their willingness to be accommodative, probably at their meeting later this week. So everybody's hopeful for a rate cut. Certainly no rate increases. It sent the S&P futures over 3,000 for the first time. You know, my attitude is that's not the stock market doing well. That's a 0% cost of capital leading to currency debasement. So it's the value of fiat currencies going down, not the value of stocks going up. Needless to say, the S&P up 20.67% for the year. Home builders up 30.82%. A lot of excess capital flowing into real estate, looking for a way to get income. Peter Navarro, who did a very interesting interview on China trade and the negotiations with China, and one of the things he mentioned was their confidence in trying to get the Dow to 30,000 plus. And the way he said it wouldn't surprise me if that's an internal administration target of 30 to 35,000 on the Dow. And if you look at the push for 5G, for the Internet of Things, for deregulation and privatization, I think a combination of all of those things together absolutely is pushing for, you know, they've got a vision of how you're going to get to 30,000 on the Dow. VGK, the European ETF, now up 17.17% for the year. Germany up 15%. Big announcement this last week, Deutsche Bank laying off 18,000. I'm sure that's going to be very helpful for the city versus Frankfurt squabble. Again, remember during the bailouts, the Americans stuck their banking bill to the taxpayers, and the Europeans didn't anywhere to the same extent. And so now what we're seeing is a lot more pain in the European banks. The developed markets minus North America now up almost 16% for the year. China large caps up 11.5%, small caps up almost 15%. And then the emerging markets up 11.5%. Commodity index up 5.46%. That's backed off a great deal since the sort of indication that we have a little bit of a slowing. Gold up 10.21%. And silver really lagging, down 1.38% for the year. What is absolutely flying is the new Bitcoin pump. Bitcoin earlier today was up 12. The price is at 12,400. So it's very much skyrocketing because you remember we ended last year in the doghouse. It wouldn't surprise me if it was able to beat its prior high before this pump is over, which means, you know, you'd probably see over 20,000, but, you know, don't be surprised if it then tears down to, you know, much, much lower numbers. The market cap is still tiny, so it's now at about 200 plus billion. So you're going to see it fluctuate here, 200 to 300 billion. I put up an interesting statistic this week. It's now using, Bitcoin is now using more electricity than Switzerland. It's just frightening. So in financial terms, it's a tiny market, but it's very effective at sucking a whole bunch of retail out of gold and precious metals. So I think there's absolutely a relationship between the fact that silver is still in the doghouse and the Bitcoin pump is up. You know, it's funny. I just heard one shill say that, you know, it was the best performing investment. This is not an investment. This is a pump and dump. If you want to play pump and jump, just be prepared to lose all your money. But whatever you do, be prepared to pay taxes, because I watch people swap and create taxable gains, including short-term taxable gains, you know, with Bitcoin at 19,000, and then it tears down to below 6,000, and suddenly they don't even have enough money to pay their taxes if they liquidate their whole position. So be really careful, because this is dangerous radioactive stuff. And if you look at the prototypes on cryptocurrency, there's a lot more prototyping to be done. If Bitcoin is now using more electricity than Switzerland, it's because the blockchain gets very, very inefficient, you know, as you try and grow the thing. Oil now up 32.15%. I'm sure the little squabbles between the UK tankers and Navy and the Iranians in the Gulf is certainly helping to keep that price high. From Texas to Russia to Saudi Arabia, a lot of people making money on that. Okay, top stories. The Global Harvest Farmageddon. If you didn't read our annual report a couple years ago on Global Harvest, I really suggest you go back and take a look at that one. Because we are experiencing Farmageddon. There was a quote in an article I was reading on India and the monsoons. A British finance minister in 1909 said, quote, "The budget of India is a gamble in rain," unquote. If you look at any relationship between food, land, agriculture, and the total GNP of a country, these kinds of droughts, floods, bad weather are devastating to the real economy. And so while the S&P and Bitcoin prices are flying, it's very important to remember that the economic fundamentals are not so wonderful. We see more flooding. There are serious, I've been putting up videos on the Mississippi River. You've got flooding, you've got problems with shipping. Farmers can't, because of the flooding, they can't plant. You've got ecological damage from pesticides and sort of the unnatural water flows and runoff. We have a possible hurricane this weekend in the Gulf and real threats to New Orleans and Baton Rouge, both flooding and the water supply with salt water coming up the river from the Gulf. So if you look at the harm to farmers and related businesses and the translation into both the GNP and food prices, there are, and these are also industries that have been hit by the tariffs and the trade wars. So we're talking about some very significant pain in the heartland. And I keep beating the drum. I'm going to keep beating the drum. We're all going to have to do more and more to create local food resiliency. Let me go through some other stories that I think are worth noting. Africa has now launched a 55-nation trade zone. Now, they've got a lot to work out and make this go. It's called the African Continental Free Trade Area. There are plenty of trade areas in Africa, but this brings it all together, and it's the largest since the creation of the WTO in 1994. Africa has tremendous potential to grow, and certainly eliminating the tariffs will help. One of the things they announced was that they have launched a digital payment systems for the zone and instruments that will govern rules of origin, tariff concessions. And that kind of regulatory organization and an internal digital payment system could be very powerful. So it's all in the implementation. But if Africa really gets it together in terms of managing internal flows and increasing, sort of lowering the barriers to trade internally, it could be explosive, particularly given the fact that they have a tremendous amount of great farmland. And if you see what's going on in the weather, the world has a need of that farmland. It's one of the reasons China has been so active in Africa lending, is because they need the food. China trade negotiations continuing. It's very interesting that one of the problems I think that the Trump administration has with the negotiations on Huawei is you can't object to the Chinese being able to do surveillance and mind control through their phone equipment without admitting you're doing it. So I'd love to see that negotiation start to heat up and lots of information leak out about what's really going on. It's interesting, after the G20 meeting, Beijing Review put out some of the statistics on global protectionism. I'm using the Economist phrase, globalization. According to the Global Trade Alert database, over 10,000 protectionist measures were implemented by 19 members of the G20 from 2009 to 2018. U.S. was number one, implementing 1,693. Germany implemented 1,225 in the same period. So there's no doubt about it. Protectionism is growing. China has requested that the U.S. cancel the Taiwan $2.2 billion arms sales. And China is really, you can see, struggling with what has happened in Hong Kong. Lam, who's the Hong Kong leader, announced that the extradition bill is dead. But apparently the students want more than that. They want Lam's head. So they're basically asking her for her resignation. Given what's going on, that's a lot harder to accomplish than it's not a situation where you can just quit. But it's a very interesting thing for China to do, to back down on the extradition bill. And it's the very smart thing to do, but you could tell that's probably been for them a pretty painful situation. Anyway, between the Taiwan arms sales and what's going on in Hong Kong, they've certainly had their hands full on their southern border. Reports that the China Lake facility is shut down with extensive structural damage as a result of the California earthquakes. That really makes you shake your head and wonder, you know, was it a natural earthquake? And two, what's really going on at China Lake? I'd love to know. But a facility like that, if it has extensive structural damage, that's very, very expensive. America, and we've talked about this for years now, America has a fake meritocracy problem, which is going to come to a head during the elections. Tucker Carlson just did a rant on the politicians' kids getting into Harvard and Yale. So all of Gore's four kids apparently went to Harvard. He was very helpful to Harvard in engineering the housing bubble. I had a front seat on that one. And we see new headlines about Biden's book deals and speaking fees. And what we're watching is growing irritation of the fact that we've had politicians who are giving away, $21 trillion missing. they're giving away trillions of dollars, and then they're getting kickbacks, whether it's their kids getting into schools or literally getting kickbacks in the form of speaking fees or book contracts or sort of other backdoor ways. One thing I wanted to note was the state of the internet, because in terms of what's coming, we are moving into another really big change. So if you look at internet statistics, when 9/11 happened, so September 2001, 8.6% of the world population was on the internet. Today it's 57%. So if there were 500 million people on the internet at the time of 9/11, today we've got 4.4 billion. That's extraordinary growth. It's essentially 4 billion people have been added to the internet and can now talk directly. It reminds me of one of my favorite quotes from Michael Ventura: we're standing in the psychic storm of our own being. So we're creating direct connection between 4.4 billion. Okay, but it's still only about 50% usage in China, 30% in India, less than 25% in the less developed countries and frontier markets. Now, expect everybody to come in. So cable.co.uk, according to them, the November 2018 average cost of 1 gigabyte of mobile data in the US was $12.37. Catch this, in India, it's 26 cents. Proof positive that global markets aren't markets. That's a hell of an arbitrage. We should all go fly to India and get a cell phone. Anyways, but at 26 cents, you're going to see a lot more people come in. And so clearly the trajectory is to get 100% of the global population on the internet and to get the Internet of Things working. It's why you see Trump pushing so hard to push out 5G and all the conditions precedent to doing the Internet of Things. But remember, a world where half of the people are on the internet is very, very different than a world not so long ago when only the very developed countries and educated population were on the internet. And now a world where the lowest income, the 4 billion with the lowest income, all come on and get access, you know, very, very big change. So just think a little bit about what that means. But let me get back to actionable intelligence. There is a concerted push to get everybody, certainly everybody in the developed world, to integrate into their home Internet of Things gadgets. And all these gadgets are really just surveillance devices. They are devices of surveillance capitalism, you know, and you're the prey, and a lot of the companies pushing this are predators, and you're not the customer. They're using those devices to get access to your data that they turn around and sell to what they consider to be their real customer. And remember, among all the other things they're doing is they're recording every possible violation of regulation and law or every possible thing that could be quoted or said, including out of context, to manipulate or manage you or even harm you. It can be weaponized. So do everything you can to minimize digital access. I have hard lines. I don't use Wi-Fi. I would never let any of those gadgets in my house. As I told you, I just bought a new stove that has no digital anything in it. It's wonderful. But we have, I mentioned this because TrueStream Media put out a new video today called The Infallible AI Oracle and the Future of One-Shot Answers. And it's about Alexis and the different, I think Alexis is Amazon's, but these different sort of AI surveillance devices that people are allowing in their home. And it's, you know, like everything TrueStream does, it's an excellent description of these kinds of sort of surveillance devices and why you need to be very, very careful. Our hero this week are the 14 Russian submariners who died recently. If you look at any descriptions of them, they were very experienced, very senior. Many of them, I think all but two, were captains. We don't know the details of what happened. Was it a fire? Was it an accident? Was it covert warfare? We have one mention at the funeral of the for the families of the fact that their courage avoided a planetary disaster. It clearly appears like they shut down their compartment to protect the ship, to protect everybody else on the ship, and to protect, you know, who knows what else could have happened with a potential nuclear disaster. It reminds me of the Fukushima 50, who basically risked and sacrificed their life to protect Japan and the world from the fallout of what happened at Fukushima. It's a reminder, and I wanted to mention them because it's a reminder of the fact that we as a society, as a civilization, are depending on the professional excellence of so many different people around the world who are dealing with the high-risk situations, whether it's managing weaponry, whether it's managing nuclear technology, whether it's managing biowarfare, whether it's managing, you know, quality control on everything from all sorts of healthcare applications to pharmaceuticals. Our whole society depends on their professional excellence. And you see time and time again where people rise to the occasion and do remarkable things and take remarkable penalty and consequence for protecting the rest of us from risk. And it makes it that much harder to do when we live in an environment where there is a lot of fake meritocracy. If you are a educated and very professional captain who's risking his life to protect us from nuclear risk, and you're watching your kids not get into the best schools while people who don't deserve it are getting their kids into the best schools, it's hard to maintain that excellence in the face of fake meritocracy. So it's all the more reason that you and I should appreciate the people who perform to that standard and try and perform to that standard as well and do everything we can to encourage real meritocracy. Because the world is full of highly complicated and serious risk. And, you know, and we want the best of the best to be dealing with that risk. And we certainly don't want fake meritocracy dealing with it. So thanks to those 14 Russian submariners, and thanks to the people like them who every day do their best to manage the risk in our world. Our interview this week is with the great Dr. Joseph Farrell. It's the part two of News, Trends, and Stories. It was a wonderful conversation. We started off with the Year of Da Vinci, one of my favorite things to talk about this year. But one of the conversations we had was the war on children. And we promised that we're going to talk more about the war on men, because you can't have a war on children unless you get the men out of the way. And the war on men is also a very serious part of the cultural warfare underway. But it was a very interesting conversation. I'm going to be doing a hang with him next week. We're going to talk more about the FASB 56 and the missing money. It's been very gratifying to see how much he understands and has grabbed a hold of that. And of course, Joseph can connect so many dots in so many areas. I'm just always fascinated to see what he'll burp out with next. I just think he's going to figure out thousands of things that I didn't even see. Anyway, but this second quarter discussion with Joseph was one of my favorite. It was just a lot of fun. And let's go to the movies. I want to bring up Amazing Grace. It's a new documentary that was made from footage that was shot in 1972. Sidney Pollack was the director. Aretha Franklin came to Los Angeles to the New Temple Missionary Baptist Church with the Reverend James Cleveland, one of the great gospel greats, and the Southern California Community Choir to record a live gospel album in two sessions. It's an album I've owned since the early 80s. I've owned it for decades, and it's one of my favorite gospel albums. It became the best-selling live gospel album, I think, in history, and still is. And anyway, but what happened was they were finally able to do the work to remaster the music to match up with the film footage. And after a great deal of work, was able to put it all together and make a documentary that just recorded basically the recording sessions between a live audience. It was two nights back to back. And frankly, if you love Aretha Franklin half as much as I do, or gospel half as much as I do, it's just remarkable. She is just a remarkable singer, a remarkable musician, a remarkable performance artist. James Cleveland is also great. The two of them together are great. And it's just a beautiful, if you love gospel, it's just a remarkable thing to watch. It's in the theaters. It's not yet out on DVD. It'll come out, I believe, in August. And I was able to see it because I was on a plane. And I think on my flight to Zurich, they had it available. And so I got to see it. But anyway, if you love music, Amazing Grace. And it's to me, it's a reminder. We're not going to, I just don't think there's a way to move through a time like this without music. I just think music is a source of unending inspiration and energy. And, I say that I'm in Sofia to see the opera, so I'm headed to Parsifal tomorrow night, and I'm hanging out with opera lovers. So music for me is a very important source of joy and inspiration, and I love gospel music anyway. But if you like Aretha Franklin or you like Amazing Grace, it's just a remarkable thing to watch. Okay, ask Catherine. Dear Catherine, I know and suspect that most of this is true, and my strategy is to turn a lawn duck and simply go around as much as possible. Assuming Mike Adams is credible and unlike gatekeeper Alex Jones, I wondered if you had any further advice, as I do listen to all your podcasts. Then he sends a link to a announcement by Mike Adams that he's going to, let me just read the excerpt. Mike Adams will unveil stunning new evidence that planet Earth is being terraformed to annihilate the human species and many native life forms in order to prepare the planet for reseeding by non-Earth entities. Our planet is undergoing deliberate large-scale alterations, on and on and on. You can read more either at the link or in the paragraph I put in the notes. Here's my response. I have no idea if any of this is true or not. There are numerous potential scenarios to kind of explain the extraordinary things that are going on in this planet. You hear some people propose that it's ETs. Some people propose it's interdimensional, some time travel, some crypto-terrestrial, some simply, a leadership that uses massive disinformation of this kind to hide the fact that they have advanced technology and basically want to keep everybody in the dark. I mean, there are many different possible scenarios. One of the things I say, if the end of the world is coming, why are Carlyle and Blackstone trying to buy everything up as fast as possible? They're certainly not acting like the end of the world is coming or the human race is going to be, extinguished. They're busy trying to, they have all these scenarios coming out telling you why you should give up and go hide. But meantime, they're trying to buy everything up. You almost wonder if they aren't trying to keep the prices lower. And there's no doubt that we're watching massive amounts of new technology rolled out with any thought or risk management or concern as to what it's doing with people. So part of this could just be idiots getting, it's like cavemen getting a hold of laser guns. The reality is, I have no idea. I mean, I have no idea why Mike's saying it. I have no idea if it's true. What I keep saying is there's an invisible governance system, and I don't understand who's really in control of it and how it works. And I find that very irritating. I find it irritating to live on a planet where the governance structure is invisible and there's this many questions about it. I'm absolutely convinced whoever is running it views us as a separate species, but I don't know if that is a different access to knowledge and technology or they really are a different species. I have no idea. Anyway, so the answer is I don't know. I don't know why Mike's saying it. I don't know if he's right or not. But I'm absolutely convinced there's a logical explanation to what's happening, and I, for one, would love to know it. So if you go to the conference, I would really appreciate your report on it. Anyway, Catherine, it was great seeing you at the Minds of Men premiere in Austin. I'm in awe in the amount of work you put into your thoughts and research. The value we receive for the price of the subscription is off the charts. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Thank you. I normally download the podcasts and listen to them as I drive around town running errands. I think of lots of questions and comments during that time, but promptly forget them when I'm at the computer hours later. For once, I'm at the computer and thinking of some of the topics that I've running around in my mind, so this email will jump quickly from issue to issue. I recently purchased and read your Who's Who and What's Up in the Space-Based Economy. On page 11, you mentioned several publications by the OECD Space Forum. In case you didn't know it, they have a new publication as of June this year. I didn't know that, and I really appreciate your sending that. It's called Space Economy and Figures. I love the studies they do. I just think they're chock full of very interesting information, so I'm delighted to know that. We've posted it, and I'll take a look. Measles outbreaks and vaccination. You talk about measles outbreaks in New York City and the forced vaccination of the Jews. Around the time there was another incident that I've not heard you mention, there was an alleged outbreak of measles on a Scientology-owned cruise ship. All passengers were quarantined, blood samples were taken, and I read somewhere that they were forced vaccinations, but I've not been able to confirm that with my internet search this morning. In any case, it looks like they're going after the powerful religious minorities first. It's interesting. I had read that. I didn't bring it up because I didn't feel like I could find enough information to even have an opinion or comment, but I did take note of it. The Scientologists have done some very good work on protecting kids from the ADHD drugs, so it wouldn't surprise me if they were targeted, but the answer is I don't know. Then on to your third point, 1996 Gloria Naylor. You've recommended this book numerous times, and I finally ordered and read it. Like you and many of your subscribers, I read a lot of frightening articles about Black Op teams running around, but her portrayal of the kids who were terrorizing her chilled me to the bone. While you keep emphasizing that we need to surround ourselves with people of integrity, it's good to remember that there are total psychopaths out there with access to classified gear, and they view harming people as a sport. That's where the tools in spiritual warfare really come into play, because I'm having difficulty telling the difference between people like that and actual demons. Yes, that's a very chilling thing to read. I've read numerous reports about things like that and experienced it myself during the litigation. And it is very important to realize that other people can be weaponized in frightening ways. If you read John Hall or Mark Rich, you can see my reviews of their books. So John Hall and Mark Rich, and I think I have links to them in Control 101. It's all part of the Control 101 package. That's very helpful. People who've lived in war zones understand this. And the reality is, if you live in America, you've been very protected from this kind of thing. If you live in the Middle East, it's not surprising at all. And I think one of the problems of the integration we're seeing from getting everybody connected in the world and everybody on the internet is people who've lived in very brutal societies or in much more violent societies or situations are now getting integrated in with Americans who they see as remarkably sort of stupid, naive, and easy to prey on. For reasons of personal safety, I think it's very important to be cognizant of how people can be weaponized, including with the cell phone technology. Operation, now your fourth point, Operation Gladio Poliums. I think I was reading this at the same time you were. I really like the nuts and bolts approach to how the operations were set up and executed, but he keeps saying their goal was to resist communism. Well, if that was the goal, then it was a total failure. And even in Italy, ground zero for the Gladio units, communists were very powerful. The people running the operation were either incompetent or that wasn't really the goal. So if resisting communism wasn't really the goal, then what was the goal? I'm glad you brought that up, because if you look at much of the anti-communist lore, I'll have real questions about what that was really about. It's a much longer topic, but it's on my list to have a Solaria report on what's the communist thing really about. Well, there's more, but that's all that comes to mind right now. Safe travels, and if you have events within 10 hours of Dallas, I'll be there. So put this on your calendar. Secret Space Program 2020 is planned for Bastrop, Texas, outside of Austin next spring. So put that on your book, and I'm going to make sure when I come for Secret Space Program that I have a Solaria event as well, because there are so many great people in Texas that I really want you all to meet each other. Catherine, have you heard that the FDA gave approval to a home device that shocks the brain that they say is safe for treating children with ADHD? See link below of an interview with Dr. Peter Breggin. I posted that and some of his articles about this. I had not heard about it. I really thank you for bringing that to my attention. I'm a great admirer of Peter Breggin. You can learn all about him in The Minds of Men from TruthStream Media. Great interviews. And I have to tell you, this is so, basically you're talking about hooking kids up to an electrical device that shocks them all night long. This is horrible. And they call it Monarch. Monarch, of course, was the MK Ultra program to mind control children. So this is absolutely horrible. And it's more, talk about the war on children. Here it is. Anyway, I very much thank you for bringing that to my attention. I've become a member of Dr. Breggin's not-for-profit, which lobbies to protect children. And he's somebody we should absolutely support. Catherine, quick response to Mr. Farrell, your most recent podcast quarterly update and answer to his puzzlement. And then you talk about why you think evangelical Christianity is a perfect choice for the Chinese leadership. So I can tell you, you're not a fan of either the Chinese or the Christians. It's kind of funny, but you end and say, thank God for the Declaration of Independence. Hear, hear. Anyway, it's all in the notes. Dear Catherine, I'm living in Frisco, Texas to be with my 11-year-old daughters now, and I'm sorry to have missed the chance to meet you. Next time you're driving through, please let me treat you to coffee or dinner. I didn't know you were in Texas. This is from Rebel Commander is my nickname for the subscriber. Anyway, so make sure you put in Secret Space Program Spring Bastrop, Texas, because you definitely have to come. We definitely have to have a Soleri event, and everybody has to get to know each other. So I'm delighted to know that you're in Texas now. One of the things I learned by doing a quick drive to Texas is I should never do a quick drive to Texas because there's so many people I want to see. Hi, Nita. Hope you're enjoying a sunny 4th of July. And this is to my assistant. No rush today, but can you please forward this email to Catherine? Would love to host you and coordinate a gathering for subscribers in Portland, Oregon. I asked for Darlene Heckman, who runs our customer service, to call you to coordinate on Portland. So we'd love your help on Portland. And if you have any recommendations on the site you asked me about, just send it to askcatherine@solaria.com. You can also send it to customer service if you don't want me to repeat it and ask Catherine. Just mention that you don't want it repeated and ask Catherine, but I'll get it. If you send it to customerservice@solaria.com, I'll get it, but not as quickly as if you send it to Ask Catherine. Just make sure you say don't publish this if you don't want it published. Love the addition of actionable intelligence to the top of your website. I started a project of brief checklists and summarized on a variety of topics that people could download as a one-page PDF to quickly and easily understand a topic and take action. This would be part two on the website feedback for a separate project. Who should I send it to? Just, again, send it to me at Ask Catherine. So then you said, you talked about your trip to Chico next to the paradise that was hurt so badly by the fires and talked about sort of making this data available to help them. And God, what a wonderful group of people to help. I really appreciate your doing that. Again, sent to Ask Catherine. Then you said you're going to a breakfast event with the Boeing CEO and wanted to know if there were questions to submit. Yes, read The Real Game of Missing Money and ask what the impact of FASB 56 is and what it means to have a country this large with the largest securities market operating without accounting. And then a question about some health information, including the author of Plant Paradox. I ordered that book. Harry's no longer doing interviews for the Soleri Report. He's got a new business, is not often running on it. But anyway, so I ordered the book, and I'll take a look. And if it's something that Bridget Mouchet might do, I'll send it to her. I should mention we're getting a lot of great suggestions about improvements we can make. And I want you to know all these suggestions are going into what I call the parking lot. If you look at our team, we're 100% full up on the list of things we've agreed to take out of the parking lot and implement. The first big important one is to complete bringing back the library and wrap-up presentations. When the site went down last February, a lot got ripped apart, and we're now bringing it up on the new website, and it's very time-consuming to get that whole archive up, and I'm committed to doing that because I don't believe in memory wipes. So I want everything back up and properly backed up, and, you know, we thought we had it properly backed up before, but once you have to put it together again, what a production that has been. Anyway, so I want to get that finished. And then we are working hard to get, there's lots of improvements we want to make in the subscription software, and they're all underway. Things have been much improved, but we have more to go. And then we have a new plugin we're working on right now to install so that you have much more seamless integration site-wide so that you don't have to keep logging in as you move between the homepage and the library, the different wrap-up presentations. And then finally, we're working on a mobile app. There's a lot of demand for a mobile app. Over a pretty significant number of people access us on the phone. And so we want to be able, if you're driving around town and want to listen to Money and Markets, we want to make it even more easy for you to listen through your phone. And then there's no doubt about producing a two-volume Real Game of Missing Money blew a huge hole in my schedule, and I want to get caught up on producing the wrap-up theme. So if you look at that list of deliverables, it's, you know, it's a lot of improvements that are going to be happening between now and the end of the year. But on any suggestion that we can implement immediately, it's going in the parking lot, and there's a lot more. As soon as we finish all of this, there's a lot more for our team to do. Anyway, so I really appreciate your suggestions, and we very much take them to heart. Okay, that is it for this evening. Tomorrow night, Jason Bawden-Smith and I are headed to the Sofia Opera to see Parsifal. I'm so excited. I saw the first Wagner when I got here on Sunday. It was so beautiful. I love the Sofia Opera House. It's truly one of the most, to me, one of the most endearing opera houses in the world. And then, as I said before, I'm leaving for Italy this weekend, so I'll talk to you from Italy next Thursday. Next week, we have the equity overview and Rambus Churchology. I'm trying to talk Jason into doing a quick update on what he's doing in the healthcare area and the rollout of 5G and protecting ourselves. Staying healthy in a wireless world is what I will call it. Coming up next is going to be Deep State Tactics Part 4, and then can ESG turn the red button green? So ladies and gentlemen, until next week from Italy, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, you need to start one. Good night and good luck.